Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The base is loaded and one out.
Oh my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
All right. What is going on, everyone? We are discussing some rise or fall and fallers in terms of like playing time and performance. So without wasting any more time, we jump right into the content here. We don't go through all the pleasantries of all the other stuff. So we're going to go right into Masataka Yoshida. And the big thing about Yoshida is that we saw him kind of get going when he got back from this hamstring injury. And you'll notice he got back, like he was dealt with, he was day to day, never went on the IL. But what you notice here is that since the 16th, when he returned, Yoshida has been just crushing it, you know, 366, 425, 648, triple slash, 360 plus 189. So that means 89% better than league average. And a wOBA that's just ridiculous, 454. Now, the plate discipline's always been a strength of his, even coming over from Japan. It's just been something he's been good at. The BABIP, although seems inflated, 356 during the span, isn't crazy considering he is a solid hitter, puts the ball in play a lot, and Yoshida has decent speed. The 282 ISO is ridiculous. I mean, five home runs. He isn't stealing right now, but that should change. He is good for a handful of stolen bases. But the big thing with Yoshida, and obviously pulling up his Statcast page, if you go over to his breakdowns, you'll see that like everything's trending up, right? Expected wOBA. And then if you go over to like launch angle, which is kind of just a glimpse of what's going on, he's obviously getting the ball in the air more, which is what's helping the power produce. Not to mention the hard hit rate. Everything's trending up. You see it's all moving up with it. As he's elevating the ball, Yoshida's been obviously getting more sweet spot. The K rate's been kind of trending, you know, similar. He's good. I'm not really worried about that. But my point was to kind of show that he's elevating the ball more. You're seeing it all the numbers. The fly ball rate's increasing, ground ball rate's decreasing. Yoshida is creating opportunity and allowing the power to play up finally, because the ground balls were the issue. The bat to ball skills are not. Yoshida's very legitimate there. But finally elevating was kind of the key to unlocking the potential breakout here that we were expecting, at least that projection systems were expecting, because a lot of people were questioning the projections, and now it's kind of like Yoshida's showing that there's legitimacy to those projections, although not all rookies are really tough to project. However, Yoshida is showing them early on to be trending in the right direction, at least being correct in this case, because they're not correct all the time. Brett Beatty, just wanted to talk about him real quick because he's trending up. He hit higher in the lineup yesterday. I believe it was like sixth or seventh. I have to double check. Being the lineup guy that I am, I should know that offhand. But the point is that he's finally moving up in the order, and there's a mid lineup spot available to him if for the taking. And you're seeing him early on. The power hasn't been what it was in the minors, but we know it's there. Two home runs, a 191 ISO, not bad. Hitting 319, obviously 394. BABIP's not going to sustain here for Beatty, but I do expect better days ahead, especially as he moves up the lineup. The plate discipline is translating, not as many walks, but the strikeouts aren't an issue, and that's kind of important. And we saw a very similar approach last year. You know, the strikeouts weren't an issue. He wasn't walking as much initially as well prior to going down with injury, but we do know that Beatty is going to be a solid power producer hitting the middle of the lineup. You do need to be aware, though, he is in a strict platoon. They are keeping Eduardo Escobar in there against lefty. Beatty, however, he's definitely, arrows are pointing up there, no doubt about it. There's a lot to like with Beatty. It's just one of those things that be aware that he's going to be in a platoon. So if you have a lefty heavy match, let's see them next week. The Mets face two lefties. So just know that. So it looks like it's one in each part of the week. You're starting them. I mean, almost regardless, but say there was two, say if you're in NFBC formats and there's two lefties in the first part of the week, you could kind of, out of three hitters, you kind of are more likely to sit him considering the usage there. And if I pull up my other fun sheet here, which I thought I do have it up right here. You guys can't see it, but I can. The Mets, I'm going to tell you right now, if he's faced the lefty at all this year just yet, once it loads. But that's the thing about Beatty is I don't think he's even started against a single lefty to this point. And of course, the sheet isn't loading properly to help me out here. Thanks, Sheet. Let me down when I need you the most. All right, well, we'll move on then. And if it loads, I will come back around to it. But I want to talk about Nick Senzel a little bit. Oh, it did load. Of course it loaded. So Beatty on the year has started against two lefties, and one of which was of late. So we'll see. I guess he's not in a strict platoon. He was initially, but Beatty is trending up even in terms of not being a strict platoon. That's what matters here. So he's not in a strict platoon like I thought he was, because I must have missed that he started against a couple lefties, which is good because initially he had no starts against them, but now he's, you know, he still sits against the occasional lefty, against the last lefty they faced, started against the one before that. So we'll see. If it's a tough lefty, he most likely sits. However, Nick Senzel, it's like it's an annual thing with him. We go through these runs of Nick Senzel every year where he has this just shows relevance. I don't understand where the relevance comes from, but he finds a way to do it. He just finds a way to be relevant every year. There's a little bit of power, a little bit of speed here. And if you look, I mean, the plate discipline's always been a strength. The BABIP's only 315, so there's not a lot of luck going on there, especially because he has above average speed and he has a good hit tool. Senzel's also, he obviously calls Great American Ballpark home. On top of all that, he's, the elevating the ball well. That's where my notes are. I'm like, duh, where's my notes? Okay, elevating the ball well, and that's kind of what I want to mention here. So obviously, the last time we saw Senzel elevate the ball like he is, ground ball rate's only a 38.6%. Last time it was like that was in 2020, and we saw him kind of have a show glimpses of that power production and potential in 2020 for a brief moment before injury, I believe, also derailed him there. But he's elevating the ball well, which has led to better than his usual barrel rates. He's still not hitting the ball all that hard, but he's barreling the ball. He's not bearing the ball all that well either. So the power production, I wouldn't expect a whole lot. However, if he's elevating the ball, he doesn't need to have the best underlying metrics there, because I think the ball will start flying out of the park as it warms up over there in Cincinnati. It is a Coors Light, so to speak. I think it actually plays up better than Coors, considering it is a smaller park. And again, we're talking about a guy with great contact skills, limits swing and miss here in Senzel. I do think it's one of those things where you're riding it out. I don't know if you can really sell high on him in terms of fantasy, in terms of that side of things, but Senzel, this is kind of what he is. He's a good hit tool guy, a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed, not special anywhere, a solid fifth outfielder. I wouldn't expect much more out of Nick Senzel. And the guy, I guess I forgot to bring him up, Jaron Duran. I wanted to talk about him. For some reason, his page isn't up, so we're going to actually pull his page up real quick. I'm on Senzel. Let's just do it here then. So Duran's been just stupid good right now, and it's not really fair that he's been this good. It was fun. The breakout finally happened. I actually have DC shares. I didn't get them in my main, and not that I'm regretting it, because I mean, I could use offense, but I need more so power than speed. And Duran offers a little bit of pop. Obviously, there's a little inflation here with the BABIP being 522, triple slash of 406, 444, 672 for him. A little bit of luck, obviously, the WOBA and XWOBA, there's almost 100-point difference with the XWOBA being lower, but still a very strong 373 XWOBA. WRC plus 499. Jaron Duran's been absolutely amazing, and it's about time that prospect pedigree hits. He's only 26, so he's finally coming into his own. A lot of players, you know, not all prospect growth is linear. It's kind of a cliche saying at this point, but it's very, very true. So we have to remind you every chance we get, I guess. But a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, like I said, two home runs, four stolen bases is fantastic. I know the hard hit rates are great, 52.1%. He's crushing the ball. The barrel rate, double digits for the first time in his career at the pro level. There's no doubting it. Obviously, again, we're talking about overperformance. He's, even if he comes down to the expected stats that he has, which I don't like expected stats, but when someone's overperforming to this point, you just take a look at them and you realize even the expected stats, although they're expected to come down, they're still going to be strong numbers if they come down to those marks. So understand regression is going to be due here, but regression to what? Regression to still a solid producing fantasy asset. But Duran, he's doing things differently this year. He changed his approach at the plate. He's not pulling the ball as much, which is actually why I don't think the power is going to be there. But we'll talk about that in a second. The big thing here is the ground ball rate is a career best 33.3%, which goes back to elevating the ball well. If you're elevating the ball well, he's squaring it up and he's hitting it hard. That's going to allow the line drives and fly balls to play up. However, the power will not play up because he's only pulling the ball 16.7% of the time. It doesn't matter. I mean, of course, when he pulls it in the air, it's probably going to go out that much easier, because obviously if he's squaring up the ball the way he is, Duran's going to end up getting more home runs on those pulled fly balls and line drives, but he's not pulling the ball much at all. And if we look at the actual pulled fly balls and line drives, he's not doing much of that either. 75% ground ball, pulled ground ball rate, actually. So the power will not play up to its potential as long as he's doing this, but beggars can't be choosers. He's going to give you double digit home runs. He's going to steal bases, and he's going to do well all around. And he's trending up in terms of batting fifth in the lineup at the moment. from what memory serves. I believe he's been moving upwards towards fifth. So that's like everything, all systems go for him right now. I'm double checking. I want to double check the lineup spots of late because I'm pretty sure it's been fifth. And of course, again, maybe I have too many tabs open, but it's really aggravating because I can't seem to get it to work quickly. And Duran, yes, yeah, so he's been batting fifth. He's batted fifth in his last five starts against righties, and he even started against a lefty out of the last two. So although he's only started against one lefty on the year, I don't think he's in a strict platoon, but it's pretty strict. Like they aren't making a point to get him in there versus lefties. They're giving him his days off as they come around, but he won't sit against all of them. I would assume he sits against tougher lefties, and that's Jaron Duran I'm speaking about. A guy that was trending down, that's starting to heat up right now, is Luis Robert. Over the last couple of days, I've noticed he's like on a four-game hit streak, last I looked. And over those four games, you'll notice that he has two home runs. And he has, I believe he has like four or five hits over those four games. Here, we can look right here. Three-hit game yesterday, three, four, five, six hits over his last four games. This was coming off of a rather cold spell. Unfortunately, the stolen bases haven't really been there. However, he's one for one. I don't know if Robert's going to steal a whole lot this year if they want to keep him healthy, but we know the power's there. The reason why he was kind of trending down, he was on this like teetering of trending down, trending up, trending down-ish, like all in this range, is because he moved down the lineup. He was bumped to fifth and then sixth yesterday. And then Robert was also having a hard time overall, just get going. He's kind of slowed down. And now we're seeing him pick it up. A series, obviously coming off a four-game hit streak right now, and a three-hit game in Cincy, and gets two more games in Cincy. This could be the kind of the series that he needed to get going. I think Robert's going to be just fine. Not to mention that hamstring injury, unless it wasn't really a hamstring injury. It was just a lack of hustle and I'm giving an excuse type of thing. But all things considered, I like what I'm seeing from Robert. And he was the first of this trending down thing. However, he's back to trending back up over the last few games. And last guy trending up that, again, forgot to bring his page up, is Jorge Mateo. And it's just one of those things where everyone's talking about him, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse here. But leading off for the first time in his career yesterday against a lefty, if it will load his page, I don't know. But notable gains in plate discipline. It's obvious. We're talking a 10% gain, a 10% rise in his strikeout percentage in a good way. He actually reduced his strikeout percentage by 10% roughly. And then the walk rate also improved by nearly 2%. What do you want? I mean, the BABIP is only 318. And I say only because he's a speed guy. He's putting the ball in the field plenty. There's no more shift. Not that he's a huge shift issue guy, but Mateo, that 318 BABIP could actually probably go up considering his skill set. But regardless, what it is the six home runs kind of catch me off guard. I don't buy into the power. I was looking at some of his the power is going to be a little more than expected. Obviously, he's already about halfway to his season total from last year. But Mateo is just not a power guy. What's helping drive the power? Remember how I mentioned with Duran, he's not pulling a bunch of fly balls and line drives? Mateo is. Mateo, his pulled fly ball and line drive rate is up from over his career. It's right now, if you look at his pulled ground balls, it's just easier to look at pulled ground balls and you have an idea. So his pulled ground ball rate's only 44.4%. You're seeing over 25% pulled line drives and pulled fly balls. And if you look at his career numbers doing that, it's not always been the case for Mateo. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here, is that there's a legitimate, tangible approach change, if I can get to it. The pulled ground balls for his career is almost 10% higher, 52.3%, a lot less pulled line drives. And pulled fly balls have been okay. Never been a huge issue, but it's just that this year he's made it a point to improve that, which is helping drive the power. Because when you look at the overall underlying numbers in terms of power production, it's just lackluster. It doesn't really pop. Only a 6.7% barrel rate, 45.3% hard hit rate is solid, but nothing special. Maybe I'm just used to looking at players like Duran, who's over 50%, but it's not a bad one. Let's see what the percentile is for that. Actually, maybe it'll open my eyes to the fact that he's actually hitting the ball really well, because I feel like that wasn't a good number or a great number. I feel like that was like a slightly above average number. But as soon as this loads so the hard hit rate's 71% percentile. It's good. It's above average. Okay. So I thought it was made closer to 60th percentile. So 71st percentile is still very strong. It's still a very good hard hit rate. But again, barreling the ball, he's below average on the barrel rate. I like what I'm seeing in terms of the overall production, obviously. And not to mention Mateo is just showing like there's growth in the profile in terms of being more patient while also making a point to, you know, try to produce some more power with that approach. So Mateo, I'm buying for the most part, but I do think obviously there's some regression coming his way. I think we've already seen him slow down with the power, but we're seeing production overall be solid. And if he's going to start leading off against lefties, that's a little added plate appearance boost you might not have been expecting initially. Next player, this one pains me to say, it's my boy, Bryce Terang. He's been barely rosterable, let alone startable, the last few weeks after a very hot start for Terang, a guy that obviously I've been in on since day one and someone I'm still plugging. I plugged him in for the core series. He got me stolen base and some hits. So he is a guy that I am plugging in the right places. However, the thing about Terang, most notably, is that it's a very strict platoon. And when I say strict platoon, like other guys, I'm looking back. All right, Beatty's played against a couple lefties now, so he's not a strict platoon. Durant started once against a lefty, so his platoon might be lifting. Terang did start against lefties for a little bit, but that was when they needed him, not when they wanted him to be. There was injuries playing a part there. You have Tyrone Taylor returning, causing more of a playing time crunch, and they always feel the need to get Owen Miller, which I think Owen Miller hit top of the order yesterday, actually, against the lefty. Owen Miller's hitting well, so he's going to keep being lefties. You also have Mike Brousseau, who should be facing lefties as well. So by should, I mean that's the way they're utilizing them. Those guys, so with the Brewers making a point to utilize Brousseau and Miller against lefties, this has left guys like Bryce Terang out of the mix against lefties. And on the surface, you're looking at a 28.9% strikeout rate. And this is when strikeout rate is a little deceiving, because it's not because he's swinging and missing. Now, he is 4-for-5 on base pass. Terang is doing that right. The ground balls aren't really an issue. He's elevating very well. Only a 42.9% ground ball rate. That's very solid, all things considered, especially when you have a 34% fly ball rate and a line drive rate. That's really anything over 21, 22, 23% is a really that's where you want players to be for the most part. He's sitting at 23.2%. That's a good line drive rate. It's a line drive rate you want, should help succeed with batting average. And a Z contact, which is zone contact, of 86.7%, that's above league average. He's not chasing much at all. The O swing is only 27.6%. Again, league average being around 31-32%. And the swing strike rate about a point better than league average. And he's making league average contact, give or take, a little more than league average, but not enough to call it a full point. My point being is that the strikeout rate doesn't really make sense looking at this profile. There's not a whole lot of chase. He's getting a lot of called strikes on him, and the swing strike rate is better than league average. So the strikeout rate could be fixed if Terang gets a little more aggressive at the plate, I feel like, because obviously there's no real swing and miss in the profile. There's no swing and miss, and there's no real chasing. So when you see good numbers there, but a inflated strikeout rate, it's more of a passivity issue, at least from what I've noticed in the past and from what I've seen when I look at players. So although the power is not, it's not a zero, it's not great. And you see these numbers in AAA, obviously, for Terang, 13 home runs, 34 stolen bases, over a 603 plate appearance thing. I feel like he is more of a compiler. So you need, he's still 15 team mixed relevant-ish. It's just a matter, again, you got to know your matchups, you got to know your league, you got to know your, especially if you're in NFBC formats, you have to know schedules for sure with him. Because next week, again, it's another 4-2, and he's splitting it one lefty each. So you got to know that. If you're starting him, you're getting 2 out of 3 games, each of those matchups, maybe a pinch hit appearance if you're lucky in the games he doesn't start, which we've seen him do that as well in the past. Appreciate that, Dylan. Glad to make it live. Thanks for the great content. I'm glad you came here and dropped the comment. I appreciate that. Anybody listening on the podcast replay, check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/@GTFantasy. You can come check out the live stream, all the visuals I put along with talking nonstop. Next player we are going right into, though, is going to be our boy Taylor Ward. And I went up and down this profile, couldn't really find a whole lot to be concerned about. Similar plate discipline as last year. So that's okay. So there's no swing and miss added. He's obviously underperforming, but I don't know not by a whole lot. It's just a matter of right now, the only thing I could really find for Taylor Ward, there's two things. One, the ground ball rate is up. I lie, there's a few things, but I think the big issue, okay, so we're gonna go through it. There's actually a lot of things here wrong with Ward, but the big thing that stood out to me, there was one thing. He's getting on top of the ball too much. His top percentage is 10.8% higher than last year, and by far career high. And by getting on top of the ball, he's not creating that strong quality of contact that is needed for Ward. And with that, it's showing. I mean, you're seeing the ground ball rate up. So if you're getting on top of the ball, guess what happens? You're getting on top of it, the ball's gonna go into the ground. And it's showing that the ground ball rate is up, the barrel rate has dipped, and I think that's going to correct itself as we see Ward get back into making better quality of contact. I think he's going to correct course, start squaring up the ball better, and Ward with that should get more production. Not to mention, again, another guy that the power hasn't really been there, but a lot of that is just due to not squaring up the ball, as I expect him to get better doing here in short order. But it's one of those things where that's all I could really find, was that he's getting on top of the ball. Taylor Ward is, I'm talking about Taylor Ward here, that Taylor Ward's getting on top of the ball, and that with it, the lack of production, the ground ball rate, all that, once he starts squaring it up better, the ball, the production should come with it. I think it's a matter of if, not when. That's my opinion right now, looking at his profile. A guy that's just, there's a couple quick hitters here. We're going to kind of fly through these guys. So one of them is Gene Segura. And I just, ton of ground balls, 60.7% ground ball rate, not barreling. He was never one to barrel a lot, but not a great barrel rate at all. And hitting the ball a ton on the ground, lacking hard hits. He's just, Segura was supposed to be a solid, safe guy, and he's just not right now. So it is what it is with him. He's just, there's really nothing there that intrigues me. Another guy that's just been a kind of complete, not a miss is the word, but he's been a guy that just people were in on for cores, for speed, and zero stolen bases. Not even just this year. He hasn't stolen a base, even if you include 2022 in the AAA, all the way up to his pro debut and through now. So we're looking at nearly over 150, almost 160 plus plate appearances for Zico Tovar that hasn't stolen a base yet. And that's what you got him for. You knew there was a little punch. You never expected the power to be a strength, but there's a little pop here. It's supposed to be speed, and he's not giving you either right now, striking out a ton. And there's a whole lot of swing and miss in Tovar's game right now. And the BABIP is only 309, but you got to put the ball in play to have a good BABIP. So Coors can't help that if you're not putting the ball in play. Glove first prospect, and I think that's kind of the concern here. He's only 21. But the Rockies, going back to 2022, they have the second least amount of stolen bases. Them and the Twins do not run. So Tovar, even though has the skill set to run, they aren't really making a point to run when he's on the base pass. He only has one attempt, which he failed at this year. But Tovar is just a guy that if he's not running, if he's not stealing, Coors isn't going to help him be valuable. He's a drop in most formats, and that pains me to say. But I was worried about Terang, but Tovar is even more useless right now, and he's batting ninth. There's no real reason to believe he's going to move on up. I know Tovar had a decent series in Coors recently. Maybe there's reason for optimism there, but if he's not running, he's not going to hit enough power or produce enough counting stats to warrant a spot on your roster more than likely right now. So Zico Tovar is a guy that I'm just not in on at the moment. And the last guy we're going to talk about here before we get into we have a whole bunch of guys I'm putting what's called on the peripheral, meaning we're going to go through a bunch of quick hitting notes. I have a little graphic here for you as well. You'll see that it has a whole bunch of names on it. We're going to talk about some playing time and stuff like that. But the last guy we're going to talk about before we get into that is Joey Meneses, the 30-year-old breakout that everyone just, because he was one of those guys that popped in your SGP sheets. He's one of those guys that popped in the projections. And the projections still really like him rest of the season. They still have him like 16 to 19 home runs, depending on the system, hitting 260 plus the rest of the way. He is hitting 267. He's giving you batting average, but that's all he's giving you. And a lot of the issues here for Meneses is that the barrel rate's down. And a lot of that's because, I mean, he's still hitting the ball hard. So there's that. But he's 52.5% ground ball rate. Until we see Meneses elevate the ball, you're not going to see that power come back. And obviously the projection system still sees him as someone who will be bringing that power back. I mean, it's one of those things, it's almost like there's a reason why he was a 30-year-old in the minors. There's a reason why he took him till he was age 30 to even get his major league debut. And if he was on the Nationals, would he even have debuted by now? Is what you have to ask yourself. I think the price was inflated. Obviously, I think he's making a point. Obviously, the infield fly ball rate spiked tremendously, so he's not squaring up as you would hope. The home run fly ball rate's down, but he's not pulling. Last I checked, he had like some decent fly ball line drive barrel rates at one point, at least early on, but it was all up the middle and opposite field. That power, again, it goes back to pulling fly balls and line drives. If you're not doing that, you're not going to produce power. It's just, I mean, not as much power. That's why Alec Boehm has the power, but he's not pulling much. He never has. So it's a guy, one of those guys that he'll never play up to those power potential. And Meneses could be a guy that, although we've seen Meneses have success in small samples, and we've seen him have success in the minors where he's been older than the level of late. It's just one of those things where I can't say I told you so just yet. It was one of those things where there's a reason why there was a lot of people out on him. A few people were in. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Meneses because, again, it goes back to the fact that he was a 30-year-old in the minors for a reason. Is there a good month or two in there? Probably. I think there's enough there because, again, he's going to play every day. Meneses has a good batting average, so he's not a zero, but he's not gonna give you much else right now. If he's not hitting for power, he's not going to give you a whole lot of runs in RBI in that lineup either. So he's definitely a drop in 12s and shallower. 15s, he's kind of a hold. I don't think you're dropping him because there is enough path to potential there that you should probably hold on. But if you did drop him, I know like if I was there, I wouldn't even put in a strong bid on him if he was on the waiver wire right now in my main event. So maybe I'm down on, maybe it's because I was down on him entering the year and that I don't know. I always question myself when I'm like way lower on the consensus because I really had them low. And then there's a lot of people that I know were in on them. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm still not sure if I should be out completely, but I have little reasons for optimism considering all the things I already mentioned. So Manessis is a guy that I'm just kind of down on. And maybe I shouldn't be so down on. I don't know. Again, I'm really torn here on how to feel about him, but I'm just going to go with my gut and go with my original analysis of like, I'm down on him and there's a reason why I'm down on him. And I'm going to continue to be down on him. Now, I have one more thing to share. Again, I'm getting that graphic up real quick. And here we are. So on the peripheral, which my little symbol is going to have to go here. How do you get rid of this thing? Oh, here we go. I don't want to delete the logo. I just want to, oh, there it goes. Okay, it's off. All right, so on the peripheral. So we have Nick Gordon. He's played 3 of 5, I believe. And I wrote Old Habits Die Hard because I was in on Nick Gordon in the preseason. He's showing a little pop, a little performance, a little solid performance of late. So you have Nick Gordon on top of his list. Alex Call is leading off. PA and PT, by the way, if you're looking at this on the YouTube, PA's mean played appearances, PT means playing time. Alex Call has both playing time and played appearances. Low ceiling. He hit a home run the day I tweeted about how his ceiling's pretty damn low, of course, but that's what he is. I mean, he's been leading off. He's getting those at-bats. The playing time is there. He's a deeper league guy. Christopher Morel not coming up. We read the quotes from David Ross yesterday that pretty much it almost sounds like an injury is needed. I think they're still trying to get the strikeouts in check there because Morel is crushing the minors, but he's still striking out 28% of the time last I saw. Dalton Varsho is getting going. I mean, it's about time. We know there was worries, concerns there, but as a catcher, at least with catcher eligibility, I think it was Rob Silver mentioned he's pacing out 20-30 type of season, which is, you know, 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases. Varsho, that's a fantasy goldmine, you know, regardless of how bad he's hitting. But we all knew batting average was going to be a concern. Nick Prado, playing time has been there. He even started versus lefty recently. Huge K issues, and the BABIP is inflated. But if you're looking for a power upside, I mean, this guy was talked about almost in the same breath as Pasquantino in terms of like players, not in terms of being as good as Pasquantino, but a guy that was supposed to come up and be a producer for fantasy purposes. Power and didn't quite have the batting average floor and other floor as a Pasquantino. But I remember last year there was talks about Prado in a similar, at least in the same sentence as Benny, as Pasquantino, but I don't think it was ever a talent. It was more so a path to playing time slash a little bit of upside, but the floor was way lower as we've seen that kind of play out. Yuli Gurriel also has playing time right now, but that's probably until Garrett Cooper returns. Gurriel has been hitting decent for batting average, but that's kind of about it there. We're talking NL only there. Matt Mervis called up, obviously slotted right back and right into the bottom third of the lineup. He'll have every opportunity to hit his way up, so we'll see how that goes. Gavin Sheets playing a ton. Should at least have a strong side platoon role for the moment. And of course, as long as Sheets is playing, you know there's power potential there. Michael Garcia playing every day, hitting well to start off, flashing a good hit tool early. We know the plate discipline's there. We know the speed's there. He already has a stolen base this year. And I know it's at least one. But we know it's kind of, and I think I heard Eno mention a Nicky Lopez comp. I think that there's a little more punch there than Nicky Lopez has because we've seen Michael Garcia hit for more power. I don't think it's great power. I think we're talking Bryce Terang comp here in terms of like decent hit tool. Yeah, the power, like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not a huge lot, it's not a whole lot of power, but a guy that can give you some pop. I don't know. I understand the Nicky Lopez comp. I really do. But I think there's a little more power there than Nicky Lopez being kind of the complete zero that Lopez is. However, the comp itself being a hit first, you know, type of guy, he's batting ninth, so upside's very limited. But if you need stolen bases, he's the second guy you should be targeting off this list because Jiwon Bae should already be rostered in most formats, especially when you are in need of stolen bases. He stole another base yesterday. There's a chance he leads the league in stolen bases without even being an everyday player. Bae has – he led off against a righty. Was it a righty? It must have been a righty yesterday. I wrote that down in my notes, which because I know Cabrian Hayes has been leading off regularly, and Hayes usually leads off against – or was leading off against lefties regardless at one point this year. So Bae getting a leadoff spot against righties, but again, that was with Hayes out. I don't know if he's going to start getting a chance to lead off because we've seen Hayes kind of struggle. Hayes moved down to 7th against a righty the day before, not starting getting his day off. Meanwhile, Bae has led off yesterday and has started 3 straight, including a lefty. So he's kind of in and out of like platoon slash like he plays 2 out of 3 and Bae, but as long as Bae is in there, you know you're getting stolen bases. I think Jiwon Bae is a guy that if you're desperate for speed and you're in a shallower league, he's going to get them for you. If you're in a deeper league, he's probably already rostered and too late. But he's just a guy that playing time it's been trending up and it continues to trend up, even though it's like trending up while managing to be inconsistent at times. It's really weird. But yeah, Jiwon Bae, that's a guy. So I think that's going to cover all the big pieces. I know there's a couple other things I wanted to mention, but I'll get that to you on the next show. Appreciate those who watch. Don't forget to subscribe. If you're listening, 5-star rating review on the podcast is greatly appreciated. But until next time, I'm Mike with GT Fantasy or Baseload Pod, whichever you're listening to. And we'll talk soon. Thanks for watching.